Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
This podcast is part of the Planet Broadcasting Network.
Visit planetbroadcasting.com for more podcasts from our great mates.
Hi, and what's up? And also, welcome to Serious Issues, a weekly comic book podcast brought to you by your good friends at King's Comics. Also, by your even better friends, Andrew Levins and Siobhan Coombs.
Hello.
Back again for another incredible week of letting you know which comics we read last week that we enjoyed and the ones that we enjoyed slightly less.
Yeah.
Overall, I think pretty good week of comics this week.
Yeah, you know what? When I looked at this pile, I was like, oh God, there's so many, but there's actually some really good ones.
There's some stinking good ones.
Sure are.
Siobhan, this episode, I want to tell everyone, begin this episode with two little things, two little tidbits.
Lovely.
First of all, it's a lot out of our week to record this podcast every week.
Sure is.
And we love doing it. And we hope you love listening to it too. I realize that we always mention our Patreon at the very end of each episode. You know, we're a long podcast. And everyone might not hear that. So I'm just going to put it up. Maybe once a month, I'll remind people at the start of the episode that if you do want to support the show, all it takes is honestly a couple bucks. I listen to about 20 podcasts and I support as many of them as like anyone that has a Patreon. Straight away, just do that $1, $2, sometimes $5 level. Just my show of appreciation of something that I get for free every single week. You don't have to do it if money is tight. I'd get that a couple bucks a month is a lot for a lot of people.
Absolutely.
But if you are in a position where you enjoy the show and you want to support us in even the smallest amount each month, it does go a long way. I'm going to be fully honest with you. All our Patreon money, I'm probably conspicuous of one too. All my podcast money goes towards nappies.
Yeah.
Or diapers.
Yep.
Because I linked my shopping account for groceries to my PayPal account.
Oh, that's good. That's a smart thing to do.
Yeah, so that every time my daughter
poops,
I think of my loving listeners.
That's very kind.
Kicking in a couple bucks every month to our Patreon.
Mine goes straight to NBA League Pass.
Oh, wow.
That's how I watch the NBA. So thank you. The playoffs have been great.
But if you want to keep my daughter in clean nappies and Siobhan watching premium NBA, please head to patreon.com/seriousissuespodcast. There's some like weird tiers there that we wrote over a year ago now that, and look, I overcommitted.
Oh,
a lot of things I said we would do. It's like, you know, recording a 2-hour long podcast every week that relies us reading, you know, 30 to 50 comics.
Yeah.
Is an enormous investment and it actually takes a lot more.
Yeah.
Than to do little bonus things. We do honestly appreciate every single person that kicks in a couple bucks. And
I really do.
There is about, you know, 10 hours of bonus material on there. We will be recording another bonus episode very soon.
Cool.
I think we're going to do another listener Q&A.
Fun.
Really soon too.
That was really fun last time.
That was super fun. So that's coming up very soon. Again, if you go check out patreon.com/seriousissuespodcast, there's a $2 a month tier that gets you access to all of the episodes that we've recorded so far. And we might even start mentioning all the people that have supported us
in the show.
Of course, you can join our Facebook group too. Another great way to join our community, which is facebook.com/groups/seriousissuespodcast. And, I like being in touch with the listeners and it's a good vibe.
You're much better at it than me.
Also, I want to let you know, some would say even more important is to let you know that this episode is brought to you by Planet Broadcasting, our network that we belong to.
Our podcast daddies.
That's right, our podcast mummies and daddies. It's brought to, this episode brought to you by Planet Broadcasting's partnership with Care Australia and Everyday Hero, supporting women and girls living in extreme poverty around the world. To donate to the campaign, visit planetbroadcasting.com or click the link, which I'll put in the show notes later on in the episode. After we go through all the number ones, I'll let you know more about this campaign and what Planet Broadcasting is doing. It's already raised $2,000.
That's really cool.
And I thought maybe we'll ask you for more money like 20 minutes after we did it just then.
Nice.
So Siobhan, every time we record this episode, an episode of Serious Issues, we talk about...
Imagine if we'd record this episode many, many times. And it's like...
Yeah.
I've forgotten which sci-fi movie
I've seen through the future, and we've recorded this episode 14 million times and only one of them was successful.
No!
But every episode we begin by reviewing all of the new number ones that came out in the last week. And it was a pretty sizable release window for number one world, especially from DC, Marvel, and Image, who all put out pretty big books.
Mm-hmm.
I imagine they're going to be all in like kind of like the top 10 of this month, sales-wise. Not that we ever pay attention to sales figures, but
no. I'm always shocked.
So we're going to kick things off with a review of No Justice.
Yeah, cool.
Which is a brand new weekly Justice League miniseries. There are four issues. It's written by Scott Snyder, Joshua Williamson, James Tynion IV, with art by Francis Manapul.
Good Lord Francis Manapul.
Yeah, first and foremost, that was far and away my favorite thing about this issue. Also, the colors by Hi-Fi deserve a shout out too.
Gorgeous.
I think he really makes Manapul's art pop in a cosmic way that I've never seen his art look before.
Absolutely.
So this is a kind of like interim between the end of Christopher Priest's Justice League run and the what was the Dark Knight's Metal event before Scott Snyder takes over the Justice League book. So in this, Brainiac comes to Earth. Comes direct to Superman and warns him that they've opened up a dimension to this dark universe after the Dark Knight's Metal thing, and if they don't all team up, all these old celestial things. I'm getting it confused with the Last Avengers.
This is a very
number
similar
one.
Vibe, though. It is four big cosmic dudes.
Yeah, this is the
they're gonna fuck shit up.
This is the ants to
for
Marvel's A Bug's Life. Remember when they both came out like really soon because of each other?
But I think it's too far. Like it's too soon to say which is which.
Sure. I mean, I like both Ants and Bug's Life.
They both have many good things about them.
And maybe we'll do a bonus Patreon episode about comparing those two.
That sounds fun.
That sounds really fun.
You know what I watched? Actually, I wanted to tell you. I watched Spider-Man Homecoming. I really liked
it. It's fucking great, right?
It's so good. That might be my favorite superhero movie.
It's my favorite Marvel movie,
it's
for sure.
It's so fun. Yeah. So fun. I know you've all already seen it.
I did tell you at the time. I think if you go back and I was like, of all the Marvel movies, you'll love this one the most because it's pretty much just a John Hughes teen movie with superhero bullshit.
Yes, please. I loved it. Anyway, continue.
And the Vulture's great too.
Yeah, the Vulture's so good. I would still do Michael Keaton.
Oh, me too. Fuck.
Who wouldn't?
With the Vulture suit on?
Yes, please.
In the air, mid-air, getting done by Michael Keaton.
Aww, getting done is
getting
awful.
Done. That's what I call it. So... Justice League, No Justice. Brainiac comes to Earth, warns Superman of some big cosmic event that he needs to team up with Brainiac on. And not only does it require the team up between Superman and Brainiac and the Justice League, but also the Teen Titans, the Suicide Squad, and a bunch of villains.
Lobo. So,
yeah.
Lex Luthor. Sinestro. Etrigan.
Fucking Starro. First and foremost. That was
fucking Starro.
So this is like that classic thing where it's like, oh, all the villains have to team up with these heroes that they've tried to kill millions of times before. That's fine, I guess. And like for the most part, like I feel like both Marvel and DC do this, you know, every year.
Yeah.
You know, oh shit, you know, Magneto is on this team now.
You guys have to work together.
And this kind of fucks up, you know, letting the bad guys just be bad guys. Because now they're forever going to be remembered as like semi-heroes because of this event. Whatever. All of my like negative thoughts towards that is undone because of the involvement of Starro.
Yeah,
because
so
just
fun.
In the background of all of these, you know, all your superhero assembling kind of, you know, everyone striking poses photos, it's just this enormous one-eyed starfish cackling in the background. Fuck, that's the best.
It's so good. Like these are some... This is a really fun book.
Yeah.
Like a book where Brainiac comes to Earth and is like, I have no time to talk to you. I'm just going to abduct you all and now we're going to go do some shit for me.
And then my head's going to explode. And you're fucked now.
Because of Amanda Waller, who has brought all of the psychics in and trapped all of the psychics to get inside Brainiac's head. I love this.
Yeah. It was a very silly, stupid, even comic book event featuring lots of characters that I don't read enough of, either because they're regular books... didn't hold my interest for as long
looking
as
at
that.
Looking at you, Titans.
Or they just have been missing from DC books for a while. Starro, Martian Manhunter. So this is going to be the book that kind of, I feel like he's going to become the hero of this series.
Yeah, I hope so. This book had moments where I genuinely was sort of gleefully laughing out loud and enjoying myself because it was just such a fun celebration of the DCU, and it's so gorgeous, and I love Brainiac, and I love Martian Manhunter, and I love Amanda Waller. Like, this is very, very much for me.
So I would say that this is almost, these kind of like three of DC's kind of biggest writers right now, Snyder, Williamson, and Tinian IV, reading Tom Taylor's Injustice series and going, this is really fun. How do we do a book like this in regular continuity? And this kind of feels similar to that.
Mm-hmm.
They're all in like different teams, which like just seems pointless, but whatever. I mean, it would be silly to have all 30 of them on the page at each time.
For
sure. So it does make sense to split them up in that way. But they all kind of represent different elements.
Yeah, there's four different cosmic guys who have four different cosmic vibes, and so they need to be separated into four vibey teams.
Yep. I don't care about the main story, but I do care about the interactions between all the characters.
Absolutely.
And that's why I read superhero comics.
Yeah.
I'll be honest.
The main story does not matter, guys.
No.
There's four cosmic guys. They're going to come fuck shit up. We
gotta exactly. It's all about how these heroes and villains work together. And, you know, there's a few too many quippies on here, but the worst thing about this book is, I don't know who wrote Damien's lines in this, but is just that classic case of everyone like taking Damien back 3 years to when he was, you know, I know he's a bit of a jerk, that's in his character, but like they keep, depending on the writer, they make him too much of a jerk in this
one.
Almost ignoring all the growth that he's done in his books over the years.
Yeah, but he's still a little jerk.
Okay. I'm gonna just grow a little bit.
No way.
but I'm on board for this series. This is absolutely like all the fun that was missing for me for Dark Knight's Metal can be found on these pages.
100%. And I think a lot of that has to do with how lovely and bright and gorgeous the art is.
Yeah, Manipul doing great work here on this. I love some of the textures that he includes in some of his work too. It's great. Does a great Beast Boy too.
Yeah,
I like the
really
Beast Boy.
Beast Boy.
Like kind of prominent character in this.
Absolutely. There are some really funny moments with like Beast Boy and Harley. Who would have thought?
Yeah. I really enjoyed this one. Justice League, No Justice. If you've been kind of, worrying about... is that a Jim Lee cover too? That's a great Jim Lee cover. If that's Jim Lee.
That's Francis Manapul, isn't it?
What is it?
It says... Wait.
Oh, no, no. You know what? Francis Manapul's signature looks like...
It says Jim.
Jim
in big letters.
And Manapul. Do they do it together?
No. For the cover is Francis Manapul. That's just his. He just has a crazy...
Someone explain Francis Manapul's signature to me.
Maybe
I can see the F and I can see the M.
Maybe his middle name is a J.
Okay.
FJM.
Okay.
That's kind of what it looks like.
All right,
but it also looks like it just says Jim.
Let us know if what you think Francis Manapul's middle name is. Don't look it up. Just let us know.
I think it's Johnson.
Johnson?
Francis Johnson.
I think it's Jack-O-Lantern.
Good.
Francis Jack-O-Lantern Manapul. Or Francis Justice Manapul.
Oh, that's good. I have a friend whose middle name is genuinely Justice.
Yep, I knew a kid who was named Justice too.
Cool.
Fun stuff. So that is DC's big book for the week, big number one. I enjoyed it. And
yep.
Now we move over to Marvel. We've got two number ones this week, the biggest of which is the newly taken over Venom series written by recent big up-and-comer Donny Cates,
mm-hmm, mm-hmm,
who's done great runs over at Marvel recently on Thanos and Doctor Strange,
mm-hmm,
that we enjoyed quite a lot. This is him teaming up with one of our favorite superhero artists, Ryan Stegman, too, in which I think is one of the best matched books for him.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
He's great at drawing kind of like the more kind of fun and grotesque side of Marvel monsters.
Yeah.
And
he's also great at web-slingers.
That's very true.
I would very easily see him on a Spidey book.
Todd McFarlane-esque webs are back. In this
absolutely
book. You've got colors here by JP Mayer. Is it colors or is it inks by JP Mayer? Because Frank Martin is a colorist, isn't he?
I don't know.
Colors by Frank Martin, inks by JP Mayer. Clayton Clowles on letters. This is a big $4.99 number one, so a bunch of bonus pages, and kind of suggests that the symbiote that makes Venom, because this is still the Eddie Brock iteration of Venom.
Mm-hmm.
But the symbiote, it's been used and people, it's been bonding with people throughout history for many, many years. And this scene opens with Eddie Brock having a vision of it being bonded with an Asgardian.
Mm.
Or no, an ancient Norse. I guess is that an Asgardian? Or is it on Earth?
Just,
who knows?
Yeah. Just Vikings.
Just regular old boring Vikings,
mm-hmm,
who can't even live forever. But then he's introduced to someone who was bonded with the symbiote as part of Project Rebirth, which is the same project that led to Captain America getting his powers. Mm-hmm. So he was a military-esque Venom before Flash Thompson was in mm-hmm. the Remender run. I don't know how I feel about that. I like the idea of the symbiote being used throughout space because it is this cosmic thing that, you know,
yeah.
was brought into the onto Earth after the Beyonder brought it during Secret Wars or something like that in the 80s.
I don't know.
But I don't like the idea of it being around and used by military on yeah. Earth in the world in like World War One and Two, I guess they're kind of alluding to.
Yeah, it's sort of like the thing I really like about Donny Cates' other books is that he is really confident in what he's doing, and he's very like
just throwing so much at the wall, seeing absolutely. What sticks.
And seeing, and he's happy to do big things with the books that could be really, you know, fundamentally changing for the character. And I think that was really great with Thanos. I don't know if this is 100% perfect, but I enjoyed this first issue more than I've enjoyed a Venom comic since the Remender run.
Yeah, in fact, for the older character that tracks him down actually thinks that it's Flash Thompson and the symbiote and then is disappointed when it's Eddie Brock. I felt the same way, new character, because I just think I loved that iteration of Venom, and I don't think going back to Brock is compelling at all because you're still trying to make him a hero. Like,
but I like the relationship between him and the symbiote. I think that's interesting. And I think the point that like this old sort of army guy makes, where it's just like, he asks all these questions about the symbiote that Flash, I mean, Eddie has never even considered, like, how old is it?
What's its name?
Yeah, where does, you know, what's its favorite food? Do you age while you're wearing the symbiote? Stuff like that. I think that's cool.
Yeah. I guess I'm interested in finding out where the symbiote came from.
Yeah.
But it reminds me too much of all that weird venomized stuff that Colin Bunn has been doing in those weird Venomverse events.
Look, Donny Cates can't pay for the sins of...
That's true. No one can. There's too many of them. But yeah, and also like the, you know, Venom being used throughout the World Wars reminds me a bit too much of Bloodshot. Lemire's run on Bloodshot.
Where you say that Bloodshot. Like it's a bad thing.
Sure, no, you're right. But like, I'm focusing on the negatives. This was an enjoyable read. Just not the number one, the Marvel number one that Gates, not the issue for Marvel that Gates has done that I enjoyed the most.
Absolutely. 100% agree.
I'm sticking with it though. Read. His track record is very good.
For sure. This was a long issue as well.
It was a long
issue. I'm excited for it to be like a bit more.
I like my long issues of Venom drawn by Trad Moore. Thank you very much.
Yes, please.
Just let him take the 3 years it'll take him to do it.
He just embarrasses everyone else with how good he is.
I'm like a bit bummed that his next comic is written by Alice Cott.
I know, but there's the potential for it to be amazing.
I hope so. It looks incredible.
Yeah, it really does.
Tradmore's so good. But enough about Tradmore. Let's talk about Tom Taylor again, because he wrote the latest in the Hunt for Wolverine series of miniseries. The Adamantium Agenda is the name of this one, and is written by Tom Taylor with art by regular Tom Taylor collaborator R.B. Silva, with inks by Adriano Di Benedetto, and colors by Jesus Ebertov. This is a thread that I was the least interested in after the Hunt for Wolverine one-shot by Charles Soule, in which Iron Man... Actually, no, it was a toss-up between this and the Daredevil thing, where it was like, why are these non-mutant characters trying to find Wolverine? Mm. And immediately this issue reminds you of that Wolverine hasn't always just been a mutant. He's actually been an Avenger for almost 20 years.
Yeah.
And this team of people looking for him in this miniseries are some of the core members of Brian Bendis's New Avengers run, which was a series that I fucking loved.
Which I've never read.
Oh, really? It's so much fun. That's like, I think it's still Bendis doing like the most Bendis-y BS ever.
But it's when it was new and exciting.
Yes. And he had so many different characters to play with in it. He really grew Luke Cage and Jessica Jones together. So this is, Iron Man, Jessica Jones, Luke Cage and Spider-Man. We have a flashback to when there were New Avengers and Wolverine essentially, you know, giving up his life because he has healing powers. Basically, like, you know, allowing a bomb to go off because someone has to pull the, you know, that classic kind of someone has to die in order to pull the trigger on some big thing, or else the city explodes or some bullshit like that.
Yeah.
And then after that, they swear that they owe him. And so this is them returning the favor. They get word that on the black market, there's an auction going on. A classic Marvel trope of there being like an auction international orders on a boat, run by an underground organization. They're auctioning off the DNA code, the genetic code of a powerful, you know, mutant type.
Yeah.
And they all like, no, this must be Wolverine
because his body's disappeared. So it's got to be who it is.
So they go undercover, and the final page reveal is that it's not actually Wolverine's code. It is Danielle Cage. Luke and Jess's daughter. Her DNA code is being auctioned by a bunch of criminals in international waters.
Good fun.
So fun. I love that the rest of this is just going to have nothing to do with Wolverine. But yep. This is a very, very fun idea for a series.
Absolutely.
And we haven't seen Luke and Jessica fight together.
In a really,
they kind of did in the Defenders series that Bendis did earlier this year, but this feels like a really great book for them to be in.
Tom Taylor writes a fucking great Jessica Jones.
He really does.
You know, Tom is like, we're on first name terms now. he never does anything that's like, whoa, that's so crazy, I never would have thought of that. But he has some way of really understanding what we love about superhero comics and just riding the fuck out of a great team book.
Yeah.
That's all.
Yeah, totally.
He's just good at this. Good at this job.
Yeah. Like, I know we're about to talk about a Brian K. Vaughan book, but as far as like superhero number ones this week, I don't know, we're just going against like Justice League and Venom. Like, this was, even though it's, you know, just a mini series, this is totally what I want from a book like this. And yeah, he nailed it.
Absolutely.
Very good. So now we move over to Image. We have the first and second issue that came out last week of Barrier. Now, there's a disclaimer, a few disclaimers on this. First disclaimer is that the first issue was released as Image's Free Comic Book Day issue. Mm-hmm. However, this is a much better quality printing version with a much thicker paper. And this comic itself started like 2 or 3 years ago.
Yeah.
Came out through Brian K. Vaughan and Marcos Martin's online
Panel
Syndicate. Yeah, which is also where they released that other book about
Private Eye. Which is excellent.
Yes, very, very good. So yeah, this is written by Brian K. Vaughan with art by Marcos Martin and Munsa Vincente. It's called Barrier. And it is a science fiction book that's also about American immigration.
Classic Brian K. Vaughan.
This
is so beautiful. Holy shit, Marcos Martin is just incredible.
It's told in landscape format, so you hold the book sideways, which was enough apparently for King's Comics employee. But
curmudgeon.
For who long? Let's just put this out
for
there.
For who long?
For how long? For why long?
For why do we hire him? Wayne was like, it makes me feel like I'm reading a porno. And I was like, hey, what kind of bizarre 1970s style porn are you like watching? Just fucking download some like a grown-up. How do people watch porn?
Also, who reads a porno?
Yeah, exactly.
That's such a bizarre criticism.
I know. It was like, he's such a dipshit. You know, someone called the store for other reasons. But while they were talking to Wayne, they were like, oh, by the way, I listen to the podcast and I always really like hearing you shout in the background and I always agree with you. And I was like, literally no one agrees with Wayne. Wayne's an idiot. Anyway, Barry's great.
Barrier, Brian K. Vaughan, Marcos Martin, doing what they do best, and that's telling a really great story with a high concept idea with a grounded, kind of backstory.
Incredible characters, like really grounded, great characters. Half of it's in Spanish, which I don't speak Spanish, but you can still understand what's going on, and
because the language of comic books allows you to kind of, you know, see these panels that you know with featuring word balloons filled with a language you know nothing about, or you know like. One in every
words.
10 words.
Hola.
Sí. There's enough going on in each panel that you are aware of what's being trying to communicate. And the kind of ethos behind this book is that whether you are an English speaker, a Spanish speaker, or someone who speaks neither of those languages, you can tell from the comic book language enough that you know what is being communicated throughout the panels.
It's some incredibly clear storytelling and some of like the craziest visuals and colors that I think I've ever seen Marcos Martin do.
Yeah.
Really great.
We have, what's her name? Like, not Daisy. something like that.
Libby.
Libby. Libby is the owner of a ranch in Texas,
mm-hmm.
A farm space, desert farm, one of those fancy desert farms. And she finds
rustling up some cactuses.
A decapitated horse on her property,
mm-hmm.
And they assume it to be the work of a gang that traffics drugs from
across the Mexican border.
Yep, that's right. So there's a lot of kind of like, you know, a lot of tension about illegal immigrants that, you know, make their way across the border. And then we also see one of those illegal immigrants. I can't remember what his name is.
But he's from, his name is Oscar from Honduras.
Right. The two come into contact with each other at the end of the issue and immediately are unable to speak each other's language. So the situation gets quite hostile because Libby ain't taking none of this shit on her property.
Absolutely.
And then the two at the end of the first issue are beamed into space onto an alien ship. And then the second issue sees them together trying to work out what's happened while also not being able to speak each other's language and having great difficulty.
Yeah. Perfect. It's a really great comic, guys.
Yeah.
Everyone should buy it. Everyone should read it.
Yeah, definitely. And the alien craft is unlike any alien craft you've really seen before.
Absolutely.
It's like quite like gross.
Yeah. It's very like fleshy, weird.
Yeah.
Shit.
Organic.
Yep.
Material. And there's not really an explanation as to why these two have been selected to be on this spacecraft, nor why Libby's clothes have been disintegrated
mm-hmm.
and his haven't. But
I really appreciated what a normal human body she had.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, she just looks like a normal person. She's not, like, super over-sexualized. Like, anyway, I appreciated that a lot.
Well, Marcus Martin's art is awesome. It's so great. So, we get this great mix of, like, this very real kind of human relationship between these two characters and then this, like, just hideous...
the craziest looking aliens, like that look like sort of rib cages with sort of fleshy tentacles all over them, and then they kind of talk in these speech bubbles that are just sort of fluoro colors, and it's amazing.
Yeah, I think doing a much better job. I mean, this is like a very small criticism of Paper Girls, but the kind of alien tech in that, I'm often like, what the fuck's going on? Whereas this says it was very very clear communicating. It's like, you know. Even though you still don't know what the fuck they're doing, it kind of makes more sense in your head.
Hmm.
Yeah.
Interesting.
So, yeah, I would highly recommend Barrier to everybody who reads comics because this is two of the best comic makers doing something together.
It's a new Brian K. Vaughan book. What are you doing?
It's 5 issues long. I believe it's coming out one a week for the rest of the month.
Mm-hmm.
So jump on board this Barrier, and we'll be reading it alongside you for the next couple of weeks.
Absolutely. What a delight.
Real good. I did not read this next one that you've got from Image.
I read the first couple of pages and then I went, oh, cool, I can't read this.
I read the first page and was like, oh, boy.
We are talking about Medieval Spawn and Witchblade, written by Brian Hablin and Brian Holgan with art by Brian Hablin.
So I was like, oh, cool, it's a Spawn book
with
Witchblade set in medieval times. But no, this is a character called Medieval Spawn.
Oh, I didn't even get that far into it to understand.
Who is like a knight that's also Spawn? I don't know.
Boo. Anyway, that sucked.
I'm sure if you are a big fan of, I was going to say Witchblade, but probably not. Probably just Spawn.
Yeah,
this would be enjoyable, but it wasn't for us.
Yep, agreed.
I checked out a collection that Titan put out.
Oh, that's cool.
This week, the Titan are the current publisher of the Tank Girl comics. Now, Tank Girl is a British creation in the late '80s by.
Jamie Hewlett
and Alan Martin. Jamie Hewlett, of course, went on to become famous for creating The Gorillas mm-hmm. with Damon Albarn. He does the art, so mm-hmm. that very great kind of street art comic book style
mm-hmm.
With a high focus on fashion.
Mm-hmm.
And it's fun. His artwork's really fun. But I've never read these first comics. I think they've been newly colored by Tracy Bailey. I did not know that their original series, one of the editors was Steve Dillon.
Oh, cool.
And he actually has some pinups in this collection.
Oh, amazing.
also, another artist that shows up in this is Shaky Kane, who we've been enjoying the art of on The Beef recently. Tank Girl, I guess, is like, you know, it's funny reading this as an Australian because she is an Australian character who drives a tank, wears a bikini, and like...
fucks kangaroos.
And also kills kangaroos.
Yeah.
It's a punk rock comic... but made by guys who aren't very punk.
Yeah.
It's like definitely British. Like I've definitely fall more on the same era, like your Vertigo comics that were coming out at the same time. But this was, part, I've never really probably looked up into the history of it, but it always surprised me that this was a big, this got as big as it did, big enough that Hollywood actually made a Tank Girl movie.
Yeah.
Which I once sat through about half an hour of.
I've watched that whole movie a couple of times.
Really?
It's a great movie.
Yeah, I watched it at like a sleepover in high school, and we were just like, it just felt weird watching it, a big group of dudes. I don't know.
That is pretty weird.
Yeah.
Sounds like a weird vibe.
I
haven't read Tank Girl since I was in high school. And at the time, I was even like, this feels a little bit too teen for me. So I don't know how it's not...
It's teen in like a... It's like bawdy whiz humor.
Yeah.
But with like a kind of punk rock wallpaper.
Yeah.
The main reason you would read this is because Jamie Hewlett's art is fucking phenomenal. Incredible. And with the new colors by Tracy Bailey, like it just looks so good. It looks
very like super vibrant. That's crazy.
It doesn't look like she's, I would, if you told me that these were the colors that existed in the 80s, I'd believe you. Like it doesn't look like a new colorist has come on and like drastically altered the vibe of this.
No.
From a writing perspective though, I get that it's a product of its time. I found it just impenetrable.
Yeah.
It's very like the jokes didn't land. It's pretty like you let get away with a lot of things because it was made in the 80s, but you could not say fucking two-thirds of the things characters say in a comic made these days. And you know, these are characters that still have comics being made about them that kind of honor the ethos of these early issues, but are nothing like it.
Yeah. It's funny that like working in a comic book store, you sort of develop attitudes towards certain things just because you get to know the fan base of that quite well.
Right.
So I think that a lot of Tank Girl fans put me off Tank Girl quite a lot.
Right, sure. I've never met one, so yeah. I couldn't tell you. But yeah, no, I enjoyed this as an artifact. I really enjoyed the pinups and the kind of like fun thing. Cause I think it used to appear in like almost like a punk rock zine
at
first. So there's a lot of back matter and stuff from those, lots of photos of all the creators hanging out in
cute.
The 80s, which is great. So I'll definitely, this is an ongoing thing they're going to be doing, I think quarterly, collecting all of these early strips, new colored versions of them. And then with lots of fun historical matter from
That's
the time. So I'll be picking it up for that. Even Philip Bond shows up as an artist on that. So it's a pretty interesting thing of note if you are interested in, 80s British comics.
Yeah, cool.
That weren't being published by the big two. Because, you know, this seemed to be, if you ignore like Steve Dillon's involvement, this almost exists outside of that British comics boom that DC especially took advantage of, you know, when you had your Alan Moores, your Grant Morrisons, your Warren Ellis's, your Grant Ennis, Garth Ennis's, all working on their comics. This kind of existed as like an outlier to that. It's very British by way of them trying to make fun of Australia, or just kind of not really make fun of, just like create a story and character in a country they're not really very familiar with.
I sort of wish that someone, because like I think that the look of Tank Girl is what really people love.
Yeah.
Like more than the stories. I don't think anyone would be like, oh, that amazing Tank Girl arc where blah, blah, blah happened.
Where she lost her top for a while and then hung out with like a really badly written Aboriginal man.
Oh, God. I would love it if someone came in and maybe did a new Tank Girl series, like someone who really understood the aesthetic and the fashion of it, but did something cool with it. Maybe even an Australian.
Maybe even a fucking woman.
Maybe a female Australian. Dudes. Maybe even an Indigenous female Australian. That would probably be the only time in which I would be like, cool, I'm going to read Tank Girl again.
Tick all those boxes. And
then get back to me.
Yeah. But I'm going to continue just taking a look-see in these little collections. They're called Tank Girl 30th Anniversary.
Wow.
Now in full color.
30 years.
Yeah. So check that out if you are if you're interested in this as a historical artifact. I'd recommend it.
Nice.
See some good art at the very least. So Siobhan, that is it for First Things First this week, all the number ones that came out last week. Before we roll the dice, I just want to let you know about a little charity that Planet Broadcasting and all of its shows, including Serious Issues, are supporting over the next month. Claire Tonti from Planet Broadcasting and her podcast Just Make the Thing wrote me some lovely notes about this important cause that they're supporting. So don't credit all this incredible writing to me. So Planet Broadcasting and Care Australia. Last year, with the help of our awesome Planet Broadcasting mates, Planet Broadcasting raised over $40,000 for men's mental health for Movember, even though it was March. It's like they raised money for November something,
right.
But it was March.
Wow.
They didn't even try and like call it like
March.
Must march. Like work moustache in March. Anyway, I would have done that. That's why you probably only made 30,000 if I was in charge. It shouldn't have worked, but it did. In fact, it went so well. This year, Planet Broadcasting is partnering with Care Australia to support women and girls living in extreme poverty across the globe. Care Australia is a leading international aid organization that works around the globe to save lives and defeat poverty through their five pillars. We have gender equality, empowering women and girls, education, caring for a lifetime of learning, health, water and sanitation, supporting healthy lives, food security, aiming to end hunger, and emergency aid, caring for families in crisis, particularly for Syrian refugees. You can ask a question on the forum to any of our podcasters when you donate, and this year we'll aim to answer as many of them as we can by sending you some bonus contact direct from your inbox from some of your favorite Planet Broadcasting podcasters, including previous guests of Serious Issues and hosts of the Weekly Planet, James, Mr. Sunday, and Nick Mason. The bonus content will be available at the end of the campaign. To support Care Australia's life-changing work, visit planetbroadcasting.com or click the link in the show notes below. Yeah, if you are able to give a little bit of money to Planet Broadcasting's big charity campaign, Care Australia do incredible work. And, you know, we were talking about gender equality. Maybe they will fund The Tank Girl, written by an Indigenous Australian woman.
Yes, please.
I don't know. Maybe make that as a little note when you donate. Don't do that. Don't do that. Just say, give this money where you see fit, please, Care Australia. Again, it's planetbroadcasting.com.
That would be the worst charity ever. Trying to fund this really specific version of Tank Girl.
I'm all for that. I'll give money to that.
It sounds fun. I'm actually like cycling in my head through various artists, so I think we do a good job of it while you talk.
Siobhan and I might do some bonus stuff for the charity too.
Yeah, cool.
We just got to work out what that is.
Yeah.
But it'd be good, I bet.
I imagine.
Probably the best out of all of them.
I think so.
Yeah. So now we play a game called Roll the Dice for Marvel, Image, or DC, in which I roll a dice that was given to us by listener Brad Love that only has three sides, ladies and gentlemen.
It's fucking crazy. I didn't know such a dice could exist.
If we roll a 1, it's Image. We roll a 2, it's DC. Roll a 3, it's Marvel. So 3 is Marvel, so Marvel first, and then it's a 1, so Marvel, then Image, then DC this week. Let's kick things off with a review of issue 300 of Deadpool, which is currently known as the Despicable Deadpool. This is the final issue for a longtime Deadpool writer. In fact, he's written the most issues of Deadpool in history, Jerry Duggan. Jerry Duggan, alongside an all-star lineup of recent contributors art-wise to Deadpool. I'm just going to try and find the full lineup of artists somewhere in this issue, which
doop,
I'm doop, slowly...
This is me helping while you find the page.
Doing a cool turn the page noise.
Doop,
doop, doop, doop, doop, doop.
This was great, though.
This is fun flipping through here and remembering how fucking great this issue was.
Yeah, this is definitely the pukiest issue I've read in a long time.
What I loved about it is that it balanced the stupidity, the gross-out stuff that you would expect from a Deadpool book, but also having the crippling sadness that Jerry Duggan has endowed upon this series over the last few years.
And doing a very good job of sort of embracing that, celebrating all the stuff that's happened in this run, and then just in a classically Deadpool way, super meta, just wiping the slate clean and leaving it nice and fresh and new for a new artist, new creative team to come on in and do their own thing with. And he even manages to have his own little Grant Morrison at the end of Animal Man moment,
which he references. Yeah, so Jerry Duggan shows up in this issue.
But it was which is hard to do anymore because it's been done so many times. But I think he did a really great job with it, made it funny. It wasn't embarrassing. You know, I think he nailed it. I think he nailed the final issue.
So I finally found the credits of this issue, which is hidden. We have Jerry Duggan wrote it, and then apparently Wade Wilson. So Jerry Duggan wrote the first half, and then after Jerry Duggan encounters Deadpool in this issue, Wade Wilson writes the rest of it. That's pretty cute. Art on this is by Scott Koblish, Matteo Lolli, and Mike Hawthorne. Extra inks by Terry Pello and Craig Jung, with colors by Nick Filardi, Ruth Redman, Jordi Belair, and letters by Joe Sabino. I just think this is we can't really talk about this without... I don't want to spoil it if you haven't read it, because we encourage people to pick this up every time we talk about it.
Mm-hmm.
Neither of us have actually read the full run of Duggan. I bought the first 8 issues and then tapped out because it got a bit too silly and what I expected of Deadpool.
Oh, right.
It was bawdy satire
kind of vibe. Right.
Like all these like dead presidents.
Okay.
Like just like, it was like fun, but I didn't need to spend, you know, $6 on an issue every time it came out. But just kept hearing about how much better the series got once Duggan kind of really tapped into the sadness that's within Wade Wilson's head. And so, yeah, we jumped on board, I don't know, 30 issues ago, something like that. And I've enjoyed this immensely since picking it up. And this was a great farewell. Having your cake and eating it too, like you're wiping the slate clean in a way that I don't think we've seen before.
No.
And it's still sad without being like about death.
Absolutely. But I think he just did a really beautiful job of having like almost like his own run, like his own version of the character that then dies and is renewed. And that happens all the time, but he did it in like a very, like it was definite.
He
was explicit in the sense
absolutely.
Of like, it literally happens that the slate is wiped clean and we didn't have to, you don't have to be like, oh, but what happened to all this stuff?
Well, yeah, my favorite example of like someone, like creators just being like, nope, no one else can do anything with these characters is that at the end of his Hellblazer run, Garth Ennis killed everyone except Constantine. And so no one could use any of his characters again, which is, you know, one way to do it.
Yeah.
But I think what Duggan did here is a really, really clever way of saying goodbye, even though it is quite sad and like a bummer to see Wade doing what he does. But this is an awesome issue. Great art. Again, it has all the stupid, gross potty humor that you would expect from Deadpool in the first third, in which he has like a smell,
gets a superpower
emitting from him that just makes everyone that comes in contact with him like throw their guts up.
Yeah.
And there's some great gags, like Ms. Marvel comes to, and she has all stretchy, her mouth goes all stretchy with puke.
Yeah.
Real funny.
And then he's like, oh, finally, the Vision, the only one who won't be affected by my new puking powers. And then the Vision is like drowned in puke. That's good.
Very great stuff.
Good fun. I enjoyed it.
Goodbye to a great run of Deadpool. Well done, Jerry Duggan and everyone else involved. And Scotty Collins is taking over? Not Scotty Collins.
Scotty Young?
Scotty Young.
Is Scotty Young taking over on writing or art duties?
Writing. Because, I mean, he does that I Hate Fairyland, which I've not read any of, but people like that.
Yeah, but that's also him on art.
Right.
I think that's kind of the
charm.
Yeah. But
he's written something that I enjoyed in the past, but I can't remember what it was.
I've never enjoyed any of his written stuff.
Oh, no.
But he's such a great artist. I'm sorry, Scotty.
Javon, sometimes when a creator leaves a book and we get someone else in their place, it can be awkward. And sometimes it's a perfect fit. And this week we had a new artist on The Unbeatable Squirrel Girl, issue number 32. We still have the same writer, Ryan North. And while her art is featured on the cover, Erica Henderson did not do the interiors. Although we did maintain the colorist of Rico Renzi, we have a new artist joining the team. We once saw him collaborate with Ryan North on Jughead. Mm-hmm. We see Derek Charm as the new artist on Squirrel Girl. What did you think?
Look, I still enjoyed the issue. There's a lot to like still about this book.
Of course.
But there is, to me, something slightly missing. And that especially came across to me in the first sequence where we have Squirrel Girl teaching a computer science class. And it's still fun. It's still good. But there's something about Erica Henderson's art where she would have found like a more expressive way to get the information across.
Mm.
Or something. And I feel like we're missing background gags and all the little details that Erica spent so much time on.
I find Erica Henderson's artwork simple but intricate.
Absolutely.
Whereas Derek Charm's art is like simple and artistic. It's very pop arty in a way that Mike Allred's art often is.
Absolutely.
Especially with Rico Renzi's colours on this.
And I think probably Erica Henderson put a little bit more time into like thinking about people's outfits and things like that. But we get some great Kraven the Hunter moments in this and good Howard the Duck moments. And
I will say one thing, I like Derek Charm's Howard the Duck more than I liked Erica Henderson's Howard the Duck.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
She never drew his beak right. Yeah. That's like my only criticism of her artwork in the entire time we've started the podcast.
Totally. I love the van that Kraven the Hunter drives.
Oh, it's brilliant. That's like one of
that's
my
the van that I want.
Favorite returning gags of this book. But yeah, in this basically Squirrel Girl and her housemate Nancy decide to check up on their old friend Kraven the Hunter to make sure he's staying out of trouble. And they decide to do this by revealing Squirrelgirl's identity to him and just saying, you know, do you want to hang out? And so they choose to go to an escape room.
Yep.
And then it actually turns out to be run by actual superheroes, actual supervillains. And so now they are in an actual death trap. It's fun. Lots of gags. Great brain drain moments.
Great brain drain
Frequently the best character. And look, I don't think the artwork is bad. It was just...
No. It's going to take me a minute to get used to it.
Especially with Squirrelgirl's facial...
She looks very different.
Everything else I'm almost completely okay with.
Yeah.
It's just Squirrelgirl looks too different for me to be like, all right.
Yeah. Give me those buck teeth, please.
Yeah. Where's the buck teeth gone? Look, she still looks great. It's just
absolutely.
Not... Hashtag not my Squirrelgirl.
It's just different.
But without being...
I'm not good at change.
It's not... without.
I want to be. I'm not good at change.
I want to be a bit more polite. Hashtag not my squirrel girl, please.
Nice. Yeah, good. Hashtag not my squirrel girl, but this one's still really good. We still like you, Derek Chom. You're still really great.
Please.
Please.
I'm still going to stick with this series.
Yeah,
but
for sure.
It's, just it's a little bit not as much as what I used to love.
Yeah, I'll just be crying the whole time I read it.
Great. We got the second issue of Gail Simone's Domino run this week with art by David Baldion and Jesus Abertov.
I love how much Gail Simone loves friendship. She loves female friendship more than anything else. It's very nice.
So this the end of the first issue saw Domino on her birthday being thrown out of a window and plummeting to her death.
And someone took away her luck powers. But, oh, no.
But she gets given them back later in this issue and saved by Spider-Man. She has a great interaction with Spider-Man.
Yeah.
In which she says, you're a decent guy, Spider-Man. That might be your best thing, your greatest power, but you can't fix this by being a good guy, Spidey. I wish
but
you
also,
could.
Like, how perceptive of Gail Simone. That is Spider-Man's best power, that he's just a good guy.
Yeah.
Just a good guy.
I really liked that. That was my favorite moment of this issue. But this issue, on a whole, I wasn't so sure about the first issue, but I actually really enjoyed this.
Yeah, this is a good... It's fun. If you like Gail Simone, if you like, if you liked Gail Simone's Birds of Prey, pick this up. You'll probably like it.
So Domino has good luck powers, and we meet someone who, in this world, whenever she has good luck, he gets bad luck.
He's like the horrible picture in the, like, Dorian Gray.
Right. And so he's worked out that if he inflicts bad luck on Domino, he'll get good luck in return. So that is what
fair.
This is what this arc's going to be about. She has two female teammates, Outlaw and Diamondback, two characters that I'm not familiar with at all, but they're pretty amusing. And also we see a team up in this one with, what's his name? Totally Awesome Hulk.
Amadeus Cho.
Actually, and I loved him in this.
Yeah, he's good fun.
I haven't enjoyed him ever.
No, but he was
totally
funny
awesome
in this.
Hulk. Yeah, so I really enjoyed this issue. I think David Baldion's art is great. The great mix of sexy without being... like too over the top.
Yeah.
And when it is, it's pretty aware of it, I guess. Like her plummeting
totally.
To her death in her underpants.
But she's wearing nice undies.
Yeah, very good
for
undies.
For once, like, they bother to put her in nice undies. I think that there's I get the weird sense that this book could almost be tanked by the fact that, I don't know who at Marvel was like, yeah, let's get Greg Land to do the covers. Because for me, I would be totally put off.
Yeah, it's a gross front cover.
And then the cover of the next issue, I would not be into that either. I would assume, as a female comic book reader, cool, this is not for me.
Yeah, they're no good.
I sort of hope that there are enough people out there who are willing to look past this really genuinely terrible cover artist choice and give this book a go, because I think you'll get a lot out of it.
Hashtag look past the land.
That was good. I like it.
Thank you so much. So that is Domino, issue number 2. And I move from 2 to 3. We got Exiles number 3 by Saladin Ahmed on writing. Pencils by Javier Rodriguez, doing a fucking incredible work. Inks by Alvaro Lopez and colors by Chris O'Halloran. A nice mix of cultures coming together for this book about interdimensional time hoppers led by Blink. And we have a cartoonish little... baby Wolverine, a dark timeline Ms. Marvel in which she was she the president? No.
No. That's a different alternate timeline.
Right,
that's
remember.
An old woman Wolverine. Laura.
Yeah, that's right.
This is like a post-apocalyptic future Ms. Marvel who just goes by Khan, because since her husband and her child were killed, she's very serious and carries guns all the time.
Yep. We also have the young version of Kang. Iron Lad, and then also a Valkyrie who looks like Tessa Thompson's Valkyrie in Thor Ragnarok.
But acts like Hercules.
Yeah, and she's by far and away my favorite character in this.
So fun.
So this comic looks incredible and has lots of great moments, but every four pages, our team just flashes away to a different dimension. And I don't really know what the story is.
It's so good, though.
It's so... I think I'm fine with that.
Yeah.
I just... It is... Just, okay. It's so different to Saladin Ahmed's very, very character-driven Black Bolt run.
For sure.
And not what I was expecting from this at all. It is what I expect from a Javier Rodriguez comic, though.
So absolutely.
On that, in that regard, they've nailed it.
Okay, the bit where they go to the Age of Aquarius, where it's like a 60s...
Hippie Namor.
Yeah.
That was brilliant.
So good. And then they go to World War II, gender-swapped Cap and Bucky. And then Valkyrie and Bucky get it on. It's the best.
We end with a big explosion. And I guess someone died. I don't know.
Maybe. Who cares? I love this.
Yeah, it's really, really weird and fun.
I could just look at Javier Rodriguez's art forever.
Yeah, and it's a brilliant panel layouts as well. It looks like the next issue features the Ben Grimm pirate version that we've seen.
God, I love how much that comes up all the time.
It's everyone's favorite weird alternate Marvel universe that we've seen very little of in the comics. So we're going to get lots of him soon. That's real fun. Yeah, it's good. I don't know what the point of this book is, but it's fun.
Absolutely.
Maybe
that's the point.
That's all the point in this. Yeah, cool.
You got massive, like, talking dinosaurs with guns and pants.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom. Like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
This issue. I love it.
So let's keep it in issue 3s at the moment. You're at issue 3 of...
The New Mutants, Dead Souls.
By Matt Rosenberg. It's Matt Rosenberg with who?
Adam Gorham. And art and colors by Michael Garland.
So
I don't think the colors are very good.
I wasn't super on board with the first issue. Neither were you. I forgot to read the second one. You did. You're still reading it. I've been hearing really good things about this online. This issue in particular.
Yeah, this issue was really good.
I'll catch up.
Because it's really good. He's his version of Boom Boom is phenomenal. She's really funny. She's really like
that
sassy.
Sounds like you were describing a cooking dish. You gotta try his Boom Boom.
It's phenomenal. And the sort of stuff that he's doing with magic and the sort of combative relationship between this whole team, and they all sort of hate each other in a way. And there's lots of fights and magic's powers are going crazy, and it's really good fun.
Okay, great. Because this is on paper, I guess, the kind of book, you know, this like odds and ends kind of team, this motley crew of mutants. It actually screams out Matt Rosenberg, and it's a shame that we weren't connecting with it, but I'm glad we are now.
Yeah, absolutely. You would definitely like it. Okay, and there's some great like physical comedy moments. There's a bit where magic sort of zaps everyone away and is the only person left on a plane that's going down. And there's just a moment where Boom Boom is like cursing the heavens. It's like, she's so annoying. And it's just like a great little moment of physical comedy that
great.
I really appreciate.
Those are the best.
Absolutely.
Tell me about
Darth Vader.
We'll do Runaways first.
Runaways is the best.
Runaways issue 9. Yeah, totally. It's a great book and you should all be reading it because fucking every reason that I could possibly give you, but I won't give you any instead. It's just, it's far and away my favorite Marvel book at the moment.
It's really gorgeous and really fun. Chris Anka is the fucking man.
Yep.
It's got a funny Doombot in it. Sorry.
Yeah, written by Rambo Rowell with pencils by Chris Anka, inks by Craig Young with Chris Anka, and colors by Treona Farrell. Brilliant team. Even though this is the different, you know, this adds Craig Young and Treona Farrell. Usually we get colors by Matt Wilson.
Mm-hmm.
But Treona Farrell does a great job coloring in the same way. It's you know, the Runaways team from Brian K. Vaughan's run, except that they're a little bit older. And they're still a fucking mess.
Yep.
And
they're not a superhero team, guys. They occasionally get in fights, but they are not a team by any means.
And the last issue seemed to suggest that they were about to have a big fight with Dr. Doom, but it reveals himself to be a Doombot who actually teamed up with, what's his name?
Victor.
Victor, in that Avengers AI series that Mark Waid wrote, I think.
I read like
maybe it was Al Ewing. It made me go like, I want to read that.
Yeah.
So well done to Runaways for making me want to read more Marvel books. But yeah, the best thing about this is that it kind of creates these problems for our characters that you would only see in a book like this.
Absolutely.
For instance, the youngest character of the Runaways, Molly, is given a cupcake from one of her classmates that will keep her young forever.
Yeah.
And there are all these signs pointing to like her that, because no one that she's asking for advice knows that she's been given this thing, so... You know,
they're all like, yeah, stay a kid forever.
Exactly. And
being an adult sucks.
And you know that they're going to come to regret that advice, but then someone eats a cupcake and it ain't Molly. And it is, like, just in terms of story, you cannot pick a better character to have this happen to.
Absolutely.
And I just, you know, even though it's like, oh, no, you're cheering because it's going to lead to such great conversations and interactions in future issues.
Rainbow Rowell has such a good understanding of these characters. And she's so good. I think, obviously, it comes from... like the YA background, is she's really great at selecting kind of issues and themes and then exploring them through this team. And I think it's really clever the way that she's doing it, and it's really good fun, and she has lots of really funny moments.
Yeah,
I loved it.
Yeah, this is, I mean, it's pretty, it's almost always my favorite comic that I read each time it comes out, but
I saved it for last. That's how much I liked it.
Yeah, sure. I actually burnt through all my comics like really early. I was finishing them by Saturday this week.
Wow. I was reading up until the moment that you got here.
I was very, very well behaved and I didn't play video games on Thursday or Friday. That's the key.
Wow. Yeah. That's impressive.
So last Marvel book I'm going to talk about is Charles Soule's Darth Vader run. Charles Soule and Giuseppe Camuncoli, that is. Of course, with inks by Danielle Orlandini, colors by Java Tartaglia. And Guru FX. This is set before episode... and we see basically Darth Vader become the Vader that we know and love to hate. But like I've heard it described as, like, you know, Darth Vader as the Punisher making his way through the Empire and taking out Jedi. This one sees this whole arc has been him taking out, you know, one of the last Jedi. He's like this like cool kind of red skinned dude that has like two horns protruding from his head, but one of them is all busted.
Oh, yeah.
He has his crew of followers. And in this issue, you see each of these followers taken out by, like, the Empire. And as they die, the next page is how they were recruited and the life that they were promised by this Jedi, which is really heartbreaking.
Yeah.
But...
good fun.
This book is so, so great. And I actually reckon, like, required reading if you are someone that loves the movies and loves to, you know, dip your toe in and out of the comics and books. Something happens in this issue that directly references the prequels, but, like, the best part of the prequels.
Jar Jar Binks.
That's right. He's here. He's back, baby. He's a Jedi.
He's a Jedi. I'm not going to do that.
There's a brilliant moment where all of these ex-Jedi like, you know, under the command of Darth Vader, have tracked down this final Jedi. They're about to kill him, and then he realizes that they're all ex-Jedi, and that their stormtroopers they're clone troopers were all made during the same era as the prequels. Okay. And so the last thing he says in this panel is him saying, "Execute Order 66," which was the command given to the clone troopers, which resulted in them killing all the Jedi.
Oh.
So he's doomed himself, but he's also killed all his would-be attackers. But it's a brilliant cliffhanger. I'm sorry I spoiled it.
No, hey.
But I assume everyone like that cares is already reading this. Read this. It's really, really clever. And I was like, holy shit. Like, I haven't felt this way about a Star Wars comic in a while. And this was really, really great.
Yeah, cool.
Star Wars Death Vader, number 16. This has been a great run. Probably my favorite Charles Soule book at the moment.
Nice.
Yeah. He is writing a lot of them.
He writes a lot of books.
Those are our Marvel books. Now we have a whole big old stack of Image comics to get through.
Cool.
As Wayne tapes in my ear behind me.
This was one of those weeks where I was like, fuck, it's a good Image week. I'm excited to read all of these comics.
And this includes the latest issue of the book that we loved, we haven't seen in a while, Maestros.
Mm-hmm.
A huge climactic issue of Southern Bastards. Mm-hmm. Another great second issue of both Isola and Analog that we'll talk about later.
Mm-hmm.
But for me, the best book in my stack this week was a book that we've loved, but this in particular just had everything going for it, was issue 6 of Sleepless.
Man.
Written by Sarah Vaughan, with art by Leila Del Luca, Alyssa Sala, letters by Darren Bennett. This is the book medieval kings and queens, royal family kind of stuff between lands. Mm-hmm. Betrayal, all that kind of stuff, and, mm-hmm. and it's about
romance.
It's about a princess and her knight that's been assigned to protect her, who has taken a vow of no sleep, and so that he is the sleepless. And this is a vow that lots of knights take to protect their mm-hmm. the royalty in the world. And a lot of these sleepless knights eventually get taken in by the madness of not sleeping and start to see visions of things that aren't there.
Called drifting,
and they also have formed a relationship. You know, a will they, won't they? Kind of relationship. Mm-hmm. They're obviously in love with each other.
Do it already.
And
God.
This everything came to a head in this issue. You know, in a way that like this is the end of I guess the first arc, the, mm-hmm. the first trade, the first six issues have come out now, and it ends in just such an exciting and just really satisfying way.
Absolutely.
That, yeah.
And then we don't get another issue until September.
Which means lots of weeks for us just to tell you that this is the Image series that you should absolutely pick up the first trade of. It'll only be like $10 or $15 or whatever when it comes out.
Yeah.
This is a brilliant series.
Oh, the second this trade comes out, it is Queens of Kings Book of the Month. Like, yep, right. I tell everyone that they should be reading this. I think it's like so great.
Yeah. And this issue was just like all of those pieces that they've set up from the start.
Yep.
And I have no fucking idea where they're going to go from this moment at the end too. There are so many things that I'm excited about. Like, oh, what does this mean for the future of this book?
Yeah. Absolutely.
Like brilliant romantic parts, but also just like
straight up drama. Yeah.
Fuck, so good. So Sleepless, my favorite issue of the week this week.
Yeah. Yep. Perfect comic.
Really, really great comic. So we had lots of other excellent comics that came out through Image this week,
mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
including The Return of Maestros, which is the book written and drawn by Steve Skros.
You can see why it took a little while to come out.
Because it's just so intricate and detailed. Enormously epic. Yeah.
Yes.
Holy shit, who did that cover?
I think is that also Steve Skros?
No, this is the Steve Skros cover. Right. It could be like a David Rabin or something. Jean-Francois Bellew. We know him from something. I wonder what that is. So Maestros is a comic about an ordinary Earthman who's...
the son of the king of the magical realm that we don't know about, called the Maestro. And when the Maestro and all of his family are killed by bad guys, the sort of half-human son is brought back to the Maestro universe to be the king, and he continuously fucks up.
Yeah.
And seems like he's doing great. Seems like he's super smart. Seems like he's got everything covered. Seems like he's on top of everything. He's going to make it the best, most utopic society ever. And then he just fucks up consistently. And this is like, it is funny. It is dramatic. It is gorgeous. It is so beautifully illustrated. The colors by Dave Stewart are like amazing. And I love this book so much.
Blue did a lot of the covers for Avengers Arena.
Oh, okay.
I'm trying to find what interiors he did, but he's a good artist, that's for sure. Mostly covers. this issue was hilarious and gruesome and epic. I think it's the second last issue as well.
Yeah, it seems like it's coming to an end. And I feel like this is something that Steve Scrooge could just return to consistently forever.
Well,
and
I mean,
it'd be so fun.
In theory, unless what actually happens at the end of this issue is permanent.
Yeah, which seems unlikely.
Yeah, but if you thought the finale of Avengers: Infinity War was grim,
yeah,
wait till you see what happens at the end of this issue. It was great. This is another one of Image's best recent series, I think.
Yeah, absolutely. I think this is really gone under the radar. An interesting thing about this is that I saw that we didn't have that many copies on the shelf at King's, and I was like, oh, did we have to reduce our orders of Maestros? That sucks because it's so good. And it turns out that actually just the number of standing orders that we've had for it has massively increased. So there's just less shelf copies,
which
is really cool. More people are pre-ordering it. Everyone should be reading this.
Awesome. There's one more issue left. We'll let you know when the trade comes out too, but this has been a great series so far.
Absolutely.
I'm sure we'll stick to the landing too.
He's such a good cartoonist.
Oh, seriously. Like, he's so good at doing grotesque stuff that doesn't feel like gross. Well, it's still gross.
It's so gross.
It doesn't feel like, in the same way, like if you read like Crossed.
Yeah. It's not like people aren't getting raped in their eye sockets or anything like that.
It's not far from that, though.
It's not far from that, though. I love the, I can't remember his name now, but the sort of zombie guy who fucks shit up in the end and how he's just got a loincloth made of dismembered heads.
Well, no, just the skin of dismembered
heads.
Just the
skin.
Yeah. Real cool. Gross. Real good.
I love it.
Southern Bastards was the big Image release this week. Issue number 20, written by Jason Aaron with art by Jason Latour. Everything came to a head at the end of the last issue and left on a very crazy cliffhanger where we thought character was finally going to meet his end. But then another character almost out of nowhere stepped in and we weren't sure of what the fuck was going to happen. And so we see happen in this. Just huge. Like the first 20 pages of this issue were just so captivating and just thrilling in a way that I don't think I've ever experienced from an action point of view.
There's
a proper thriller.
Absolutely.
Where you have these three characters fighting, trying to escape from each other while talking to each other. And you learn so much closer as these two people work out. Well, this one person works out who his would-be attacker is. I think the finale of this wasn't as satisfying as what I wanted, but I think
I wanted him to get his brain smashed in.
But I think we'll obviously lead to a more compelling further story.
I'm really glad that this is continuing, because I sort of thought because this ties up the first arc. I was like, oh, is that it? Is that the end of Southern Bastards? But obviously it's going to continue and I'm super into that. I love the idea that this is just going to continue. We get to see more Craw Country adventures because it's just...
I look
forward to this book. Whatever. Yep. What did I say?
Craw Country.
Ah.
Oh, it's hugely wrong.
Hugely wrong. Embarrassing.
But yeah, this is a brilliant series. And another one that I don't want to spoil to people, but Jason Latour's art on this is just... Man, so good. It's so good seeing him let loose with the action too, especially the gore kind of that we see in this. It's a very unsettling comic in parts, in terms of themes and violence, but it's one of the best on the shelves.
It really is. Yeah. And Jason Latour is such a unique cartoonist. I think he's so brilliant.
I'm really glad that they're just kind of letting both the Jasons, we are as readers, just letting both the Jasons take their time with this one.
Please.
They both had, had pretty shit last years with death in their families and sickness. But they've also had insanely busy schedules with their big two stuff as well. So take your time with it. Put out this brilliant comic that will be an opus.
Absolutely.
let's move on to Isola.
Cool.
Isola? Isola?
Yeah.
I say Isola, you say Isola. Let's call the whole thing off. Number two of this series came out. Good bit.
Good.
I'm going to do Shut Up Your Face next time. this is written by Brendan Fletcher and Carl Kerschel with art by Carl Kerschel and...
Ms. Sassy K.
Oh, is that how it is?
I have no idea, but that's how I'm pronouncing it.
Great. I was going to try and do it as one word. This is a really crazy book about...
this is a sci-fi fantasy type thing, alternate universe-y. We see a sort of young female warrior who appears to be protecting what we think is her queen, who has been turned into a sort of glowing blue tiger. Cool.
Yeah. I guess this is a great example of a kind of, fantasy world that lets you know more about the world by showing you this world through the main character's encounters with that world instead of going, you know, like spending long, you know, ages just setting up the world.
Yes.
It's telling the story first and foremost, introducing these characters and their trials, and then, you know, the people they meet along the way. That's the world that as it grows.
Mm-hmm.
It's really, really great way to do fantasy, I think.
Absolutely. And it's so gorgeous. If like Carl Kerschel, I love Carl Kerschel. His, like, what was that one? Gotham Academy.
That's right.
Really gorgeous. This is like leveled up. This is him being so creative, and it's beautiful. Like, it's vaguely European looking, vaguely Japanese inspired.
Excellent.
It looks
colors.
Like a gorgeous cartoon. And the colors are beautiful. It's really like luminous.
And so there's this bond between the human characters and the animal characters that you're not sure if the animals used to be humans or mm-hmm. this is just the way the world is. But the like, you know, we see animals as both something that needs to be protected and also a threat.
Yes.
I really enjoyed this issue. This is great. I love learning more and more very slowly about the world. And I really like the main character.
It's incredibly unique as well. I don't know anything else that is similar to this at the moment. And it's like the sort of mystery element is really engaging and captivating. It's
agreed.
Beautiful.
I love
it.
Great stuff.
It's perfect.
We got the second issue of Analog, which is another comic by Jerry Duggan. Came out this week with art by... Oh, God damn it. It just says the last names. Someone O'Sullivan. I can't remember what his first name is. I assume it's Mike Spicer on colors.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, I didn't finish this by accident.
Oh, this is a really strong issue.
Yeah, I like it. I like this book a lot.
So this is a book about... I was going to say like private detective, but it's not actually what he is. He is someone who, in a world without internet, because he was one of the... kind of agents who led to all of everyone's internet history being released
mm-hmm.
onto the world, and so everyone is aware of what everyone does online, so no one like most of the world either allows everyone to see everything they do or mm-hmm. they live completely off the grid and mm-hmm. underground without internet, but he is someone who basically trades information physically from group to group,
mm-hmm.
In this one he's kind of taken hostage by someone who wants to kind of bring all of the world back online again, but on her own terms. Basically, messages are handwritten and traded in that way, and she's mm-hmm. bringing back photocopiers.
Yeah.
But I found this book really reminds me of kind of the late 90s, early 2000s Vertigo.
Mm-hmm,
so
mm-hmm.
something by a Warren Ellis, or especially a Garth Ennis. In fact, there is a character, his girlfriend character feels very Garth Ennisian.
Like Garth Ennis, but... I like it.
You would like a lot of Garth Ennis' stuff. His Hellblazer run, you would love. You would. You would. I'll put money on it. You would love it. I just really enjoy it. Again, we're learning more and more about the world and the connection to the main character who gets the shit beaten out of him by like 10 different people throughout this issue. He also spray paints a Nazi's eyes, which is pretty great.
Yeah, that was good fun.
this is great. Really great series.
Yeah.
Highly recommend it. And there's a new... speaking of... Garth Ennis, actually. This book felt very Garth Ennis-y, and the next book that Jerry Duggan is writing for Image has art by John McCrae, who is Garth Ennis's often co-collaborator. He was the artist on Hitman and various other series.
Cool.
Yeah.
You know, I always forget that Hitman was by Garth Ennis.
I'm telling you.
I don't hate Hitman.
There's a Garth Ennis fan within you. You don't have to like all of his stuff.
Yeah, I don't know.
Also, you don't like that term?
No. No. It's just
Get him out?
I'm always trying to figure out why I don't like things. And sometimes it's just, I just don't like Garth Ennis' vibe. But maybe if you wrote down on a piece of paper all the things that Garth Ennis does, like all the sort of dirty jokes and blah, 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 that should totally appeal to me. It just doesn't. I don't know what's going on.
That's fine. Issue 3, World, right now. It's a new segment. We've got two three issues. One of them is Oblivion Song by Robert Kirkman and Lorenzo De Felici. In which we very slowly learn more and more about this world. But this is like...
it's a very depressing version.
But yeah, also it's like tedious. Kirkman has a great... like I think with Walking Dead, I guess and Invincible, I read both of them in trade form.
Right.
So all of these issues where not that much happens.
Yeah.
To begin with, all the setup stuff... didn't feel as tedious, whereas like when he did Outcast, it really, really felt dragged out and slow, and not as bad in this book, which is about almost like a rapture-esque kind of event in which a lot of people from our Earth are kind of transported to a world of monsters. And now, like a decade or so past that point, someone who lost his brother is kind of doing these routine trips back to this world, trying to rescue people and bring them back to our Earth. But some of them don't want to be rescued, and there's mystery afoot, Siobhan.
Goodness. I really, really like the art on this.
Yeah, me too. The art's fantastic, and the art, and also the onomatopoeia the sound effects.
Yep.
Worked into the art is really great. But story point of view, it's good. It's fine. It's chugging along. And
It's a lot of like relationshipy drama stuff right now.
But only glimpses of it.
Yeah.
He's great at doing glimpses of things, but I don't think it works when you're setting up a world and a story to begin with.
Yeah.
I would like a more meat to this story.
Absolutely.
Faster. I'll still read it.
Yeah. Still good. Still good.
Far from bad.
Absolutely.
Prism Stalker, issue number 3.
Okay, I'm really sad because I did not grab a copy of this.
Oh, what?
Yes, sold out.
Well, okay,
which
cool.
Which is great.
You can have this immediately after me.
Great, thank you.
This is written and drawn by Sloane Leong.
I love Sloane Leong.
Whose art style is so unique, and her writing style of this is just so weird. We basically see someone who's been abducted from her home planet and kind of taken to this race of aliens who are training her to be a warrior, I guess is the simplest way to tell this story. But there's so much trippy, crazy space shit in this. And it's basically, this is like a almost like a day at her, like kind of training.
Cool.
In which she gets the shit beat out of her by
training montage issue.
By a big purple wolf, who is basically like, you know, like scaring the shit out of these people so that their powers and things can manifest.
Cool.
It's really, really different and interesting. Yes, and there's an amazing preview for it, a new comic
amazing.
By Joe Keating and Wook Jim Clark.
I have read the first issue of that, and it's fucking incredible.
It's called Flavor. It's coming out
really
very
highly
soon.
Recommend.
It looks awesome. It's like a cooking.
Yeah.
I mean, I love food based comics, but this one is like a fantasy food book.
Yeah, it's really good. I got to read a retailer preview of the first issue.
Looks really good. But
I recommend.
Yeah, we'll talk about that when it comes out.
Sorry.
But yeah, in the meantime, Prison Stalker. It's such a wild and weird. Book, but the kind of main drama has obviously kind of come through in this issue, and that is that our main character is trying to prove herself as a warrior, or else she loses her life, I guess.
Yep.
That's how it goes when you're stalking prisons.
Absolutely.
Port of Earth, issue number 5 by Zach Kaplan, on Andrea Muti, and Vladimir Popov, came out this week. This is the pretty awesome Top Cow book about a world in which our Earth has been used as a port for aliens to kind of fuel up. And with that comes a series of problems when aliens leave the port and fuck up humans. We see a lot of this book for the point of view of a crew of agents who have been assigned to kind of monitor alien activity but without interfering with the aliens. So they're not really protecting humans. They're kind of protecting the aliens from humans. But that's really difficult when the aliens are trying to murder humans. So it's quite a convoluted process of of tasks that our characters have to do. The world that this is in is far more interesting than the actual story that's being told here. Mm-hmm. As we learn more about the reasons that the big companies agreed to allow the aliens to build their port here to get access to alien technology that only very few companies are able to use.
Mm-hmm.
But the story featuring like these agents hot on the heels of an escaped alien is actually getting quite captivating and good now. So, yeah, it's gone
cool.
Good. Gone good. That's our image review. It's my annual cough returns to the podcast for a special appearance. Is it annual or is it biannual?
I don't know.
We've got some DC reviews for you. And the first of those is going to be the finale of Batman White Knight. Did you read that?
Yeah, I did. I've been very confused over the last 2 weeks, and I got confused as to what was this week and what was last week. But yes, I did read that.
I gave you 6 books that you forgot to read the last week, so you may have got them confused.
I did get confused. Anyway, I like this.
So this is written by Sean Murphy with an art by Sean Murphy too, with colors by Matt Hollingsworth.
Mm-hmm.
I've been up and down about this series, which is kind of like showing that the Joker takes a bunch of drugs and he's sane now. And as a sane man, he decides to show Gotham that the real criminal is Batman. But then in doing that, he unleashes the most evil version of Harley Quinn ever. And it's up to Batman and Joker, an unlikely team up that you'll never, ever see happen in any other comic book.
Never, ever.
They've got a team up to turn take her down. I thought they definitely stuck the landing on this one.
Mm-hmm.
And even though I've kind of... I do finish this series wondering what Sean Murphy was trying to say. I think the story...
Batman's cool.
No, but he basically in the finale of this, Batman kind of is like, I'm as bad as the criminals that I beat up because I love beating up criminals. and I don't know, like...
That's a fun point, though.
Is
That's
it?
A
I don't
good
know.
Point.
I, for me, it was like he took more inspiration from like the Arkham games, the Batman Arkham Asylum and Arkham City games, than actual Batman comics themselves, which is fine. But that's not the version of Batman depicted in here. Didn't really feel like a version of Batman that I've read in comics before.
It was a version that I liked, though. I thought it was I found it to be a more interesting look at Batman as a man than Tom King's current run or Scott Snyder's couple of runs. And I thought this was good fun and beautifully illustrated and
yeah, no,
real tone to it, which I think is missing from a lot of Batman comics.
Looked incredible the whole way through as well. And I think we'll read very well in one hit. I meant at some point in my life, I may even read it all in one hit.
Hmm.
Probably not, though. There was a lot of unsubtlety throughout this series. And for the most part, this ending was pretty satisfying to me without resorting to him just Sean Murphy suddenly being one of the characters and telling me why the story was. Exactly.
Like when... the classic Tom King thing of a radio piped over the dialogue says explicitly what the theme of the thing is 5 times in a row, beats you over the head with
5 issues in a row.
Yeah. I thought this was more subtle than
and
that.
There's no way we won't get a sequel to this because
I hope it ends
on somewhat of a cliffhanger.
I like it. I like this alternate universe that Sean Murphy's created. It's good.
I'm sure it sold extremely well, so and it will do in trade too. So
everything Batman sells great,
especially if it's a contained thing.
Absolutely, it's very nice as a retailer to be able to recommend something like
Thanks,
that.
Thanks, Sean Murphy.
Thanks, Sean Murphy. I missed a whole bunch of stuff this
week. Let's keep things Batman.
I didn't read it.
Oh right, Detective Comics.
I'm kind of glad though.
980. Well, I don't know if you're going to say that because in this in the current story, which has gone on for way too long, This kid, what's his name?
Ulysses.
He has gained access to all of this future tech from this future version of Tim Drake's world who came to stop Batwoman from turning into an evil person that she does in his future. We now learn that this evil Tim Drake came from the old continuity, pre-New 52 continuity.
Yeah.
And Ulysses, in order to try and break Cassandra and Stephanie Brown, shows them that in this world they were Batgirl.
Oh, okay.
To kind of go look how pathetic you are in this world. Which, good point. Like, make them Batgirls instead of just being spoiler and orphan. Fucking orphan.
Orphan. Worst name. Worst name ever, guys. Do better.
Definitely. But instead of them being bummed out, Stephanie Brown is like, are you telling me that I could be Robin? I could be Batgirl? You don't understand how much inspiration that's given me, and now it looks like she's
very motivated.
It's her going to be kicking ass. But this is weird because it's referencing old continuity again.
How do they explain away the continuity thing? They go like, a flashpoint happened and you weren't Batgirl anymore.
Not yet. It's just like, this is from the timeline and it just shows images of them. Made me long for both of those runs because they were both good runs. Also apparently in Flash this week, Wally West, could see the Flash Museum, but Barry couldn't, and so they keep referencing the previous continuity for no reason.
Interesting.
Something's going to happen.
Got to be some kind of ongoing plan where they get rid of
when they finish Doomsday Clock in a decade.
I just would like for them to stick with one continuity.
Yeah.
Anyway,
stick with something.
I miss this. I'm sad.
The new Superman and the Justice League of China issue number 23, which is the second last issue of this run. There's only one more to go.
And then what? That's it?
Yeah. Gene Luen Yang wrote this one with art by Brent Peoples and
good
Matt
name.
Santarelli. Colors by Hi-Fi. And this was largely about the kind of the Aquaman figure they've introduced in this, who is
Aquaman of North Korea.
That's right. He's like a kind of monster who can summon the seas. His character arc was pretty interesting, but then there's a lot going on in this that I was like, you know what, mate, this is actually nearing the end of as much of this story as I want to read, I think.
Right.
So I'm it's a bummer that he couldn't continue writing this forever because it is great having this, Chinese adjacent DC universe. But I think, I don't know, the alpaca, which is like the Chinese Batman's sister, who became the kind of Joker figure, yeah, team up in this. And then there's new Superman kind of becomes like super powerful and evil in a way for a little bit momentarily, and then becomes like a black and white version of himself at the end. It's cool. It's lots of cool ideas. I just I think this would really benefit from a co-writer.
Maybe, yeah.
Yeah.
I sort of hope that these characters stick around and we get to see them show up in other DC books.
I'm sure occasionally
in a very like the Great Ten sort of way.
Yeah, sure. But hopefully we even get like an ongoing book featuring, you know, this Asian adjacent. Like,
absolutely.
Yeah. Yeah, he's introduced and created characters from all over Asia now.
Yeah.
That are part of this new Justice League of China. It's pretty cool.
And it's a really cool thing to like for mainstream superhero comic creators to be reminded that there is a world outside of North America.
Definitely.
And that you can create characters from all around the world. But I think it in a culturally sensitive way.
I think he's been like everyone's betraying everyone and King and Kong is still really unstable. Just so many plot threads that I think this would have benefited from going the simpler route.
Okay.
That, you know, I always the Spider-Man route. You know, like a young superhero.
Keep it small.
Exactly. Yeah. Anyway, it's still really good. You read another DC book that I did not?
Look, I picked up issue 2 of The Immortal Men, which I would less like to point out, Jim Lee didn't even do the second issue.
So he just did the first issue of this?
He just did the first issue.
That's so funny. And yet his fill-ins probably get higher billing than James Tinney and the IV, who wrote it?
I can't even think of who did the art on this issue. Someone Benjamin.
Right.
Yeah. Here we go. Ryan Benjamin. Anyway, I tried to get through the first 2 pages and I was like, oh, cool, this is unreadable.
Great.
See you later.
Well done.
Thanks.
We got a new Wildstorm book this week in Brian Hill, Warren Ellis, and Stephen Harris, Dexter Vines, and someone Campbell's, Michael Cray, which is this great book, largely written by Brian Hill, who we know is taking over Detective Comics very soon, which is very exciting.
Oh, that's good news.
Colors by Ross Campbell. There you go. But this is basically Michael Cray from Wildstorm, whose, you know, powers are mysterious and slowly manifesting and not really always for the best.
It's like some kind of demon Kirby crackle in his head. I love it.
And he's kind of like this killer of would-be killers. And these would-be killers, killers that he's tracking down and killing, are all different versions of DC characters in this universe. So far he's taken out Aquaman and The Flash, someone else. But this time, this is an issue with a different version of Hellblazer, who is almost Lex Luthor-y
the best version of Constantine
that you've seen
in a DC book.
Yeah, this is really, really fun.
And
the dark magic that Constantine is kind of like working with in this actually summons a new version of Wonder Woman at the end of this issue too. So really, really cool. Michael Cray, maybe in over his head, but I reckon he's just going to kill them all.
Let's hope so. Good fun. I like it. I like the potential of an evil Wonder Woman is good fun.
Yeah. And we're past the halfway point of this miniseries. It's 12 issues long and we're 7 issues in and it just gets better and better.
Sure does.
It's really, really good. Our final DC book I read this week was the 3rd issue of the Young Animal book Eternity Girl, written by Magdalene Visaggio, Sunny Liu, and Chris Chukri.
Is this just going to be 6 issues?
6 issues. In fact, it was announced in the last week that Young Animal will be over in 3 issues' time.
Disappointing.
So we're only getting 6 issues of Shade and Mother Panic and what's his name? Cave Carson?
Yeah. Boo.
It's a real bummer.
I'm bummed out.
It's a bummer, but also, you know, it introduced us to a lot of great writers and great artists that I feel like, you know, we would have probably been introduced to them on other books that didn't. But I think it got a lot of DC readers reading some pretty weird shit.
For sure. And I hope that those creators get an opportunity to do more at DC or at Image or anywhere else.
Eternity Girl is a strange, suicidal, apocalyptic book about a woman who has these powers that she can't stay in human form for long without being in pain. She can't kill herself, which she's tried to do many, many times. But she's figured out that the one way that she can kill herself is she also kills
everyone.
Existence.
Because she could be a massive bomb.
Yeah. This book is complicated in that I'm never sure what I'm actually reading in that there have always have two things happening concurrently.
Yep.
And I'm not sure if they are actually happening at the same time. She's having living outside of her body as well as inside.
Mm-hmm.
Or is are we seeing two things at two different timelines?
Yeah. And is what she's seeing real, or has she really lost it? Or
yeah.
I find this really compelling and really interesting, and it's another example of trying to sort of tackle a big serious topic and using the genre of superheroes to explore suicide and, you know, some pretty heavy themes, but in a really clever, interesting, gorgeously illustrated way.
Yeah, I'm into it. This is a really, really cool and different series. But I hope we get a little bit more closure as the book continues. And yeah. I hope it doesn't do the Gerard Way thing where it's just like, it's weird. Deal with it.
No, it's finished. Yeah. Bye.
It's weird and delayed and over. The end.
Just like life.
The end with a question mark. That's how he does it.
Absolutely.
Those are our DC, Marvel, and Image reviews. And now we move on to other publishers.
I only read one other publisher.
You didn't read The Highest House issue number
4? I did. Thank God. I did read it.
I was about to flip my lid.
I'm so sorry.
You can't deal with 11's lid flip. Not on a Monday. The Highest House is one of my favorite series happening right now. It's written by Mike Carey and art by Peter Gross. These guys.
I love that you enjoy this book because it is not one that I would be like, yeah, this seems like Eleven's book.
I don't know what it is about. I know it's, you know what it is. It's the character writing. The character it's a character book. It is a high fantasy book. Normally, that's extremely not for me.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
But this looks great, and the character writing is brilliant.
Mm-hmm.
It follows a young boy who is basically sold. His family sells him to become a slave at the Highest House, which is the I guess like the royalty house that looks over the entire town.
Mm-hmm.
And once he gets there, he comes face to rock with a strange magic being
called Obsidian,
who inhabits a big stone underneath mm-hmm, the Highest mm-hmm. House.
Probably a bad guy.
And he slowly works his way up the slave ladder
mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
by saving the king's daughter many times. But we learn lots of different things about the backstories of the king's daughter in this mm-hmm. issue. She likes
girls.
Girls, yeah. And he's like, you know, this is set many, many years ago.
Medieval-esque
times, so this horrifies our young hero, but he quickly gets over it, as everyone should.
Absolutely.
But there's just so much going on, and this is big. If you like, you know, your epic medieval betrayals, this is a pretty incredible, fun, action-filled issue.
Absolutely, and it's moving along at such a good pace.
Totally. As
what happens in each issue.
And you know that as he rises higher and higher in the highest house,
mm-hmm.
more people are going to be aware that he's like, you know, doing these deals with this. Mm-hmm. And he's also not the only person in the highest house who has communication with this weird obsidian figure.
I thought it was really interesting that the other guy,
who's like the second
sort of
in command,
his master, was like, knew that he was talking to Obsidian and seemed okay with it. I thought that was really interesting.
It's really, really great. This is a must read, I think.
Absolutely.
It's super great.
Best thing Mike Carey has done in a really long time.
Yeah. And the covers by, is it Japanese artist? European artist. Fabian Alquia? No, that's the colorist. Oops. Yuku Shimizu is a Japanese artist. Is the covers. They're so good.
They're so gorgeous.
The next month's one is just off the hook good. So yeah, that's The Highest House. Highly recommended to all listeners. It's really, really great. Even if you are like me and don't always care for fantasy, this is my kind of fantasy.
Good fantasy.
Good fantasy. Great. So I want to just be really sad for a moment. We got a small supply of
mm-hmm.
Ghost Money issue 9 last month. And then Ghost Money issue 10 came out in the regular supply.
Annoying.
But without the 9 coming here first. So I can't tell you how good the finale of this brilliant series has been. By Terry Smolderen and Dominic Bertel through Lion Forge, but I definitely will when the issue 9 comes, or maybe the trade will beat it here.
Yeah, I'm definitely going to be picking that up in trade.
It's a very, very cool series that I will definitely talk about more in the future. Let's talk about Black Crown.
Yes, please.
Punk's Not Dead, issue number 4, came out through Black Crown this week, written by Simon Barnett David Barnett, my bad. I don't know why this writer feels like a Simon to me, but he does. David Barnett wrote this one with art by Martin Simmons, and it's just fucking awesome. This is really good. We always bring it up, and I feel like we bring them up a lot. Hellblazer is a very important run to me. Constantine is a very important character.
Very important
to me.
In terms of comics.
Yeah, and
this is very 90s Vertigo Constantine vibes.
Yeah, a character that is always hardly done by in comics these days, and so for me, it was just like this unashamedly British thing that exists that was being published by someone American, and just allowing itself to just be so fucking British, and it always just tickles me when I get that from another comic now.
Absolutely.
I'm getting these vibes from this book. I've said it in the past before, and I'll probably always say it when I talk about it, because I just think it is such a great feeling to have while you're reading a comic.
For sure.
Especially when you read an old lady, cigarette in hand, telling a cop, "Knob off, wooden top. We're the feds." That was the best thing I read in a comic this week.
Absolutely.
So this is about a schoolboy who starts seeing the ghost of a punk named Sid, who is, you know, very, very similar to Sid Vicious. Mm-hmm. And weird shit starts happening to him at school and in his town. Meanwhile, someone from like a federal organization of they look into like mysterious
occult
acts, which is led by one of the greatest characters that
the little old mod lady.
Yeah,
who, with a beehive.
What's her name? It's so funny. Dorothy Culpepper is her name.
Perfect.
She is. This entire issue is narrated by a letter being written by someone, a man, Asif Beg, who is basically been assigned to work with her on this, you know, whatever the fuck this weird mission that he's on is.
Yeah.
He is equal parts like scared and impressed by her, and I loved his dialogue describing her actions as she's doing the exact things that he's describing. And then we have great, great moments between Sid and the main character who I don't know the name of, whatever it is.
Fergie.
It's Fergie. That's right. How could I forget Fergie? This also has a scene set in the Black Crown pub itself. Black Crown Publisher has manifested itself as a pub.
It's good fun.
Which we'll get quarterly little comics from. But it's cool to have it appear as a setting in this issue. Feels really, I thought it was a really, really neat little Easter egg.
Absolutely. And this is also like, if you like things like, if you liked Phonogram, the sort of first Jamie McKelvey, Kieran Gillen, Music is Magic book.
Yeah.
This will appeal to you because it references lots of sort of British specific pop culture music. So like they talk lots about Northern Soul and various British, you know, the Rolling Stones and stuff like that. It's good fun.
Yeah, it's really good. And also like the punk part of it. I know normally like, you know, we were talking about Sean Murphy earlier. Mm-hmm. He did a comic called Punk Rock Jesus, which wasn't really that punk rock. This one feels like proper punk rock.
Absolutely. And I like that we're finding more and more out about this sort of Sid character. That's a fucking great cover. Who is that? I love that.
Dilraj Man.
I love Dilraj Man.
It's a great cover. Real good. So the final comics to talk about from IDW this week, we got issue 4, the finale of The Spider King, written by Josh Van, illustrations by Simone Diamini, and colors by Adrian Block. This is a book about like Vikings and aliens and weird future tech that they come like they become the owners of in order to take down this gross spider alien who takes over a ton of like Vikings. It was a really, really fun, grotesque. If you like Head Lopper, the art is quite similar to that, a bit more gruesome, with like crazy space tech as well.
Hell yeah.
And this ends in a satisfying way enough that if they didn't do a sequel, you'd be fine, but it also ends on The Spider King will return. So
cool.
I would read stacks more of this series. This is really, really fun. The characters are fun and driven, and it's good to see all these very different character types interact. And the setting is really cool. Had a great incentive cover by David Rubin.
Hell yeah.
Which is really, really cool. Yeah, great week for cover bees.
Mm.
Finally, I tried to get through the second issue of The Season of the Snake, which was a European comic that Titan Comics put out through their Statics Press imprint. The first issue I read last month. You didn't make your way through it, but I loved it.
It's just very heavy. It's just a lot.
It's a lot to take in. It's written by Serge Lehmann and art by Jean-Marie Michaud. Mm-hmm. And it is like this extremely hard sci-fi, also high fantasy. Both of those things jammed together with stacks of lore and world building and weird races of aliens and weird religious customs. And
if you have 1 hour to spend reading a single issue, then definitely you should pick this up.
I was ready to dedicate another hour to reading the second issue, but it was all these new things.
Oh.
And referencing things. I just was like, wait, is this referencing the first issue? I can't remember. Mm-hmm. And it was too much. There was too much in that first issue for me to remember. So I think at some point, bye Wayne. At some point, I'm going to, if this comes out in trade, I will try and read the whole thing in one sitting. But yeah. I just don't think it lends itself to monthly reading.
I also would hope that if, when this does come out in trade, they do it in an oversized format, because yes. It's incredibly detailed. There's a lot of text. It's quite hard to read in that format.
I'm skimming through
my
old
people eyes.
Skimming through these pages to find you some of the incredible art that you see here.
Woo!
Real good stuff. So The Season of the Snake, I really recommend it, even though I could not get through it.
George just looked at me really strangely. It was a 2-page spread of doing it.
Doing it.
That's why I cheered.
As we all know, Siobhan calls it that.
I'm an adult.
So that's the end of this episode. Nice. Thank you so much for listening. Again, if you want to support us on Patreon, you can find us at patreon.com/seriousissuespodcast, and we appreciate even the thought, but we appreciate the money even more.
Absolutely. And guys, money is better than the thoughts. Is that what you were going to say?
Sure.
Yeah. This Friday, if you like Fence and you are located in Sydney, Australia.
The comic fence. Not just like Siobhan.
Not fences.
Doesn't understand that the plural of fences is fences.
No, it's fence, like sheep. The writer, C.S. Paquette, who is a Melbourne-based lady woman, will be coming to King's Comics at 6 p.m. We're going to do a one-hour sort of chat about comics and stuff. I need to write some questions. And then the second hour is going to be a signing. If you're local, come on down. This should be good fun.
Tell you what, if you sign up to our Patreon, you can message us a question for Siobhan to ask.
Oh, yeah, cool.
Picard.
Please do. That's a nice little incentive. Are we going to try and record it as well?
Yeah, I'll talk to you about that.
Okay.
That'll be cool if you did. If you want to find us online, we are facebook.com/group/seriousissuespodcast. Also, if you want to donate to the charity that we were talking about earlier, Care Australia, planetbroadcasting.com is where you can find all the information for that. I'm at LevDog on social media. Siobhan is Siobhan CBG. Come and say hello. I love hearing from everybody on there.
Same.
Love getting, I get DMs from listeners on Instagram now.
Hey, same.
That's fun. So thanks so much for listening, and we'll see you next week for a whole bunch of more comic books. Siobhan's looking through the list of next week's releases now.
I'm seeing if there's anything I'm excited about. Next issue of Gideon Falls. Yes.
I forget what that was. What was that one?
That's the new Jeff Lemire spooky.
Oh yeah, that one's good.
Death Barn. Black Barn, Thing, issue 3 of Infidel. Good week for spooky comics. Next issue of Barrier. That's good. The second trade of Black Magic. You guys should all be picking that up. I'm just looking at the image.
Oh,
releases.
Shit. Aether is back.
Oh, cool.
The, Matt Kent and David Rubin. Aether
and
comes
Cave
back.
Woman.
Cave Woman. I don't remember what that is, but sure.
No. Cave Woman's like a really awful, pervy comic. No one should read it.
Can't wait to read it. See you next week.
Bye.
This podcast is part of the Planet Broadcasting Network.
Visit planetbroadcasting.com for more podcasts from our great mates.
I mean, if you want. It's up to you.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free. Or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices?
And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
When you drive a vehicle so reliable it's backed by a 10-year, 100,000-mile limited warranty, you stop thinking about what you can't do and start doing what you never thought possible. Visit your local Kia dealer today to see what you're capable of in a vehicle that inspires confidence around every corner. Kia. Movement that inspires.
Call 800-333-4KIA for details. Always drive safely. Limited inventory available. Warranties include 10-year, 100,000-mile powertrain and 5-year, 60,000-mile basic. Warranties are limited. See retailer for details.